Hey, Holly popping in here to say, have you registered for Create yet? It's our live event where you can rub elbows with other restaurant professionals and learn from some of your peers, no matter if you have 10 units or 10,000. For loyal listeners of this podcast who are restaurant operators, we are excited to announce that you can register for free. That's right, free. That's a $550 value at no charge for you. Just go to create.nrn.com and use the promo code EXTRASERVING. One word at checkout. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie. Today on the pod, we're going to be talking about Starbucks closing even more stores, according to leaked video of Howard Schultz. Chipotle closed the first store that planned to vote to unionize, and Domino's is down internationally for the first time in 113 quarters. Later on, you'll hear from David Berzon, CEO of Snooze and AM Eatery. Elsewhere on NRN, Takeaway with Sam Okus featured Farrellyn Wolf, CEO of Good Sense, where they talked about the Kansas City-based sandwich franchise, where they're adapting to meet both consumer and franchise needs. And NRN is launching a brand new podcast. Get your first dose of First Bite, the new daily morning podcast from NRN. Every day we'll be coming at you with brand new podcast covering the day's top headlines, as well as a deeper dive into one of the stories with an NRN editor. And now it's time to introduce my co-hosts.
I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News, and Nation's Restaurant News launched a new podcast. That's not like to come. That happened this week, so go subscribe. Anyway.
And it's so good. I'm Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor of NRN.
Didn't change my script from last week, apparently.
I guess not. Holly's not going to gloat about that podcast, but she does a good job. That's a Holly original right there. First Bite. Go check it out.
It's true. And she did do a good job on the fly with that, because I can see her script. And so I know that it is different from the words that came out of her mouth just now.
So how are you guys doing?
Oh, just dandy.
Can you hear it in his voice, listeners?
You know, even when you have a stressful week, you've got food. Let's give a shout out to the restaurant industry. Even when you have a lot going on, you can have a nice meal at a nice restaurant, and all is
really
well.
Really sustaining us.
Shout out to my Starbucks right now that's sustaining me.
Well, preparing for our conversation, I see. That store has not yet closed.
No, not the one at 3rd Avenue and 39th Street.
So the crime there in Midtown, not quite enough yet to force the closing of that Starbucks?
No, the crime in Midtown is not, there's not enough homeless here in Midtown to close this store. No drug usage here, apparently.
I guess not, according to Howard Schultz's parameters. I will say yesterday I had lunch at Hudson 29 here in Columbus, which is a Cameron Mitchell restaurant. Had a nice sushi lunch and it was delightful. So that's my restaurant of the week to give a shout out to as I continue to explore the restaurants of my new home here.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I can tell you guys are pretty excited about that.
Well, I was telling our coworkers earlier today, because one of our coworkers said that she's been a week plant-based. And so I was saying that I've basically eaten all plant-based this week because I'm doing this really cool thing that we're going to be doing coming up that revolves around plant-based eating. And so I've been going to all these different plant-based restaurants. And so I've basically eaten at plant-based for the entire week accidentally.
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 Well, it says something about the restaurant industry that you can accidentally go that long eating plant-based, because I bet you 10 to 20 years ago, like, that ain't happening, because everywhere you turn is just meat, 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 meat. So, you know, we've come a long way.
No, 10 years ago, I was a vegetarian. 10 years ago, I was a vegan, and you could not find food anywhere. I was eating salads and fried pickles at Buffalo Wild Wings. Because that was all you could eat. So that was my life. Delicious. But like that was all you could eat.
Sounds good to me.
I think you can. By the way, you should talk about that upcoming plant-based project that we're working on. Because we've mentioned it we said something about it on social media. It's not a secret. You can talk about what we're doing.
Yes, so we are actually we're looking for the the first plant-based nationwide chain, and we are comparing two of the really hotbeds for plant-based innovation, New York City and Los Angeles, and we're trying to see which city is going to have the first plant-based concept to go national. And we are doing a lot of research on it, and we're going to come out with videos and articles, and it's going to be really exciting.
Yes, because our listeners know that the only good things here in this country come out of New York and Los Angeles.
Facts.
As our resident flyover country native, I will say that hard eye roll, but anyway.
How many potential national plant-based chains are based in Columbus, Sam?
That's a good question. I should do my own research here.
Yeah, if you want to... Like, you can do this series with us, Sam. You just got to step up and do it.
Okay.
Yes, Sam, you can participate.
Challenge accepted.
Great.
Go for it.
Awesome.
I did eat some really cool vegan barbecue the other day. This isn't part of the package we're doing. It's for another separate story, because apparently I'm just really in the plant-based world right now. Pretty convinced that I should go plant-based, by the way, after eating all this food. I'm getting close to it.
But you wouldn't be able to eat Taco Bell.
You can eat some things from Taco Bell.
The biggest downside.
Some things from Taco Bell, but not really.
But anyways, they made this impossible meat that's smoked in a smoker, and it has this texture. I can't even describe it. It was a texture like real meat. It was very, very cool. It's at Pure Grit Barbecue here in New York City on 23rd and Park. It was very, very cool. Delicious food. I will be a customer of theirs for a while, but just like the coolest innovations there that I saw. So just like, I couldn't believe they like burn the impossible meat and then they smoke it. And then it's these strips, but they like break apart in the way that like meat would break apart. It was very, very interesting.
My question for the future of the plant-based movement is, do customers really want it to taste and feel like meat? Because I think so far the conversation has been around supposing, yes, they want it to be like fake meat. But I feel like anecdotally when I talk to people about this, I just feel like people are like, you know, I just want to eat plant-based and vegetarian, and I don't like that stuff because I don't want it to taste like meat. I don't know. There's probably two camps on this, and it's probably evenly divided. But I just feel like the more we try to get this stuff to taste like meat, I get it. It could convince meat eaters to come over and try it. But I also feel like more and more people are like, I mean, me personally, I love a good black bean burger because I like the taste of black beans. I don't need to eat a black bean burger and think to myself, ooh, this tastes like beef. But I guess it's probably fairly divided on that front.
Yeah, I think with all things, there's no one consumer prototype. You know, for everyone who wants to just eat a black bean burger because they like black beans, there's a person who wants something that tastes like hamburger meat.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge of the industry, right? Restaurants have to figure out how to cater to every type of possible consumer. And then maybe, you know, the plant-based person is there with, you know, their partner who eats meat. And so you've got to really have all the options available.
Yep. True.
It's a very interesting conundrum. So let's get into the news. Sam, we didn't even dilly-dally last week when you weren't here. We had no dilly-dallying. We just went right into the news. You missed it.
How disappointing. What is this podcast for if not for our dilly-dally?
Great question.
But fine. I guess you can be professionals.
We even dilly-dallied before the podcast started recording today, audience. So
it's true.
I would like our audience to know that I did offer to join last week's podcast if they could arrive in the office before 9 a.m. and they declined. So yeah, there's that. They couldn't come into the office before 9 a.m. Therefore, I didn't get to have a spot.
Come into the office at all that day, to be clear.
I was here that day.
Holly did.
You could have.
But someone took us out the night before and bought all those cocktails and all that wine.
Who would do that?
I was here the next day. I was here the next day recording the podcast by myself,
just
I was
sitting.
Up bright and early. I was still here. I was still at the office.
I was at the office at 8:15 that day.
Your hotel is across the street.
Touché. Does not count. All right, all right, all right. Time for this. Time for
this.
Time for
dilly dallying.
Oh, we brought it back. So apparently, I am king of dilly dally.
I think that's the point. We have pinpointed the problem.
King
putting
dilly.
That on my resume. Mm-hmm.
Great.
My all kids right. will like that, by the way.
King dilly.
That's not daddy to you. That's king dilly dally.
It reminds me of like a story that I'd read when I was a kid. Okay, now we're really getting distracted.
Oh boy, yeah, here we go.
All right, Holly, focus on the store closures. Because we have two stories about store closures today. So just real happy news.
Store closures, where, Holly?
So Starbucks is closing, quote, even more stores, according to leaked video from Howard Schultz. I mean, they closed 16 stores last week because of health and safety concerns due to increases in homeless populations and increases in drug use, as we kind of mentioned earlier. Some stores mentioned finding needles on the floor. Some stores had installed boxes to dispose of needles, but apparently it didn't work. Howard Schultz had met with employees over the past few months in the wake of unionization, and he basically was like, this is what employees want. This is an easy fix for me to do, and I'm going to do it. So he's going to close even more stores. He was pretty angry in the video. There's more on this in one of our episodes of First Bite, if you want to hear from Joanna Fantozzi, who talks about what this kind of means. But what do you guys think this means?
It seems like a pretty extreme measure as a response to a complicated issue. I mean, this aspect of crime in the stores, around the stores, and especially in these urban neighborhoods. I mean, obviously that's such a complicated issue because every city has crime. I mean, every community has crime. Of course, you're going to have concentrated crime in basically every city. And I mean, what is a Starbucks supposed to do? Just pull out of the cities? And I mean, they really have built so much of their success on being in the cities. Like Holly, you grabbed your Starbucks on the way into the office. That is something that is quite a common thing in cities, right? As you show off to the camera. So I just think it's kind of a perplexing thing to go to this extreme measure of say you're going to close stores, because that's a pretty big deal. And I think it's probably, my assumption would be, now look, I'll first start by saying like leaked footage is like makes me cringe. I don't like this idea of like, ooh, this secret, you know, thing that wasn't supposed to be public. Not to say it's right or wrong. It's just like, okay, like this wasn't a public thing that Starbucks said. So let's, you know, take everything with a bit of a grain of salt. But simultaneously, you know, if this is in fact the company's intentions and opinions, then it just feels to me like we're not getting the whole story. Like, it would be easy, I guess, to pin failure of a restaurant on, well, crime in the neighborhood, guess we got to go away. Like, it feels like just sort of a way to sweep other issues under the rug. And Starbucks has been going through an awful lot lately. So I don't know. I find the whole thing kind of bizarre because, again, I just don't see how closing stores and blaming the crime is quite the solution when cities are hugely profitable and beneficial to a brand like Starbucks, and also crime is just kind of an ever-present solution. The last thing I'll say is, with the advent of virtual brands and off-premises service and all these things, like, could we not find a more creative solution to this problem? Like, maybe you just scale back, you find smaller footprints, you do more off-prem business rather than dine in to try to protect your employees. Like, if it's an issue of employees, like, there's other models you could try to work the urban environment, and maybe that's on the radar. I don't know, but I just find it all to be kind of a head scratcher.
Yeah, I think between what seemed to be a somewhat rash decision on corporate's part to close those 16 stores in the first place, between that and the fact that this footage was taken and leaked at all, and like Howard Schultz's kind of attitude in the footage, all just points to just how tense things are behind the scenes at Starbucks. Because we know these big corporations work hard to maintain, you know, a happy front. And in some cases, it's genuine. And in some cases, you know there are things going on behind the scenes, but this is a rare example in this industry of cracks starting to show, I think. I almost feel like we're boiling up to something. Like, there have been tensions, obviously, between the unions and corporate, and, you know, Howard Schultz has stepped in as interim CEO, and now these stores are closing, and I can't shake this feeling that, like, we're building up to something, and it's just, we're getting a rare glimpse behind the curtain, and it's not pretty.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, another place where this is kind of boiling over is Chipotle, where, you know, they closed the first store that was going to vote to unionize. They were about to vote. They were literally about to vote to unionize, like, the day after something they closed, or, like, the day they announced the closure. I mean, like, this is another place where we're seeing these union talks really boil over in terms of how corporate is reacting, and we haven't seen leaked footage from Chipotle. I don't think we will. They're a pretty tight ship.
Not after what they saw from Howard Schultz.
Yeah, they don't have someone like Howard Schultz at the helm. I mean, it's a little wild to see how these companies are reacting to this new wave of unionization. What do you guys think about the whole Chipotle thing?
I mean, Chipotle corporate is behaving in much the same manner as Starbucks was 6 months to a year ago when we were starting to see the unions form at Starbucks, you know, which is to say they closed the store in Maine and said, well, you were understaffed. You were unhappy because you were understaffed. So we closed your store, as if to say we solved the problem ourselves by closing your store, which is similar to some things we heard from Starbucks. Well, we'll give these benefits to people who aren't in the unions because you said you wanted these benefits. So now we're giving them to our employees. You know, it's hard to understand why they wouldn't learn from some of what Starbucks is going through.
I do think it's a bit like whack-a-mole. I mean, you know, having never been a corporate executive of a company that was unionizing, I don't know how you're supposed to react with this, but if you probably opened up your How to Respond to Unionizing Employees handbook, it probably says, first step, just try to put out the fire. And it sort of seems like that's what this was, right? But simultaneously, it's like, well, if everybody sort of reads between the lines and sees that you are just trying to stop the union, then why don't we all, like, what if 10 restaurants tomorrow are like, now we're going to do it, and you can't close 10 at once, right? So they could find themselves in a bit of whack-a-mole, or, I mean, I'm sure there is proof that type of strategy succeeds, that if you can kill the momentum quickly, it can't build into a bigger fire. So my hunch is that what Chipotle did is pretty average for a company trying to stop the unionization. As Starbucks found out a couple months ago, this fire could just burn out of control and they won't be able to do anything about it. Last thing I'll say is that I think that we've mentioned this before with Starbucks. I think we even mentioned it about Chipotle before, but it is just so interesting how Starbucks and Chipotle are the two companies that are dealing with unionization, because they are two companies that have really planted their flag in culture and taking care of employees and being a good place to work. And, I do believe, because both of them are largely corporate owned, that's probably why we're seeing more union activity, because it's, as we've discussed before, a lot harder to have unionization within a franchise. But I also think about Monty Moran headlining Create last year, and, you know, he wrote the book on how they built this great culture for Chipotle. He was formerly the co-CEO, and just the measures that they had taken 10 years ago, it feels like a pretty different Chipotle these days, and so now they're running into some of these issues. So I guess may that be a message to everybody who wants to plant their flag in having a great culture. Like, it's, you got to put your money where your mouth is. Don't just talk about it. Like, you got to really make employees happy. I suspect, you know, in the history of fast food franchising in particular, there have been these kind of bursts of like, oh, will it happen? Will it happen? There have been other companies that have flirted with it, and it kind of peters out. I won't be surprised if that happens again. I saw a really good piece, I think it was in the Times, about how it's sort of a perfect storm going on right now with the economy, with the pandemic, all these various elements came together into this moment to make unionization seem attractive. And when we get into a recession and other, you know, and some of this, some of whatever is going on right now kind of dissipates, it might kind of pull back the appeal of unionization. So I just won't be surprised if next year we're not talking about this as much, but it is really interesting to watch as this happens to Chipotle and Starbucks. And I would just suggest, if you're going to talk about culture, do the initiatives you say you're going to do, because you do not want disgruntled employees, because you just can see the power of a disgruntled employee.
Yeah. And then if you can't resist, don't let the cracks show.
Indeed.
My dad used to say, do whatever you want, just don't get caught. Feels like a great lesson for everybody here.
Start saying that to my kids.
I turned out okay, Sam, advice, so.
Did you, Leanne? Did you?
I guess.
I think she did.
Look at me and then decide which way you want to take your parenting at this point.
Fair enough.
We just won't take it in the direction I went. We'll take it in the direction Leanne went. How about that?
If I know what Holly's parents did and do the opposite.
Yep. I would take the parenting advice for Leanne over Holly. No offense, Holly.
I'm sure my mom is listening to this right now and just shaking her head.
Congratulations, Mrs. Enzmeister. You done good.
Oh, my God.
Perfect.
What a great shout out.
Honestly, that's it. We're done.
Shut her down.
We still have to talk about Domino's.
Oh, you're right.
Domino's.
Oh, Domino's. I know, we have such a bummer news today, but I feel like everybody loves hearing bummer news. I feel like that's what people eat up. Everybody loves hearing bummer news.
It's I told you at the beginning of this. I want positive news. I want good news.
We don't have any, Sam.
I'm so sorry.
I gotta tell the industry to do better. Give me better news, good news.
So Domino's sales are not looking great. Wah, wah.
Oh, this would be the perfect time for our sound effects. Remember we talked about having the sound effects on our recorders?
Oh, God.
Oh, that was a tugboat, not a sad trombone. That's the dad in me coming out.
Yeah, no joke.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Domino's numbers do not look great. I mean, what do we think? Is this just like a part of their pandemic, just like coming down from the high of the pandemic? Is this part of their delivery slump because they can't get drivers? Is this part of them having to close down because of all of these various labor challenges that they've had? I mean, they still have in-house delivery. Like, what do we think is causing this kind of, you know, downturn in sales for Domino's?
You know, what we learned yesterday on Tuesday, on when we did our Emerging Restaurateur Live Learning series, which you can go catch at nrn.com/live learning. We have an on-demand version of our first session, which was on Tuesday. But we had a great presentation from Victor Fernandez from Black Box Intelligence, really kind of laying out what are the sort of macro trends going on in the restaurant industry right now. And, you know, one of the things he pointed out was that both sales and traffic are really softening. I mean, where sales and traffic are not sharply going down, but we're seeing some real softening there. So, industry wide, people are not eating out as much. Let's just say that. And of course, a big reason for that is inflation. People are just, right on target when you have inflation, and then when you have a recession, people start really kind of pinching pennies and not going out as much. So I think we're seeing probably results. I expect we'll see more of this from other restaurant companies reporting their results. You're going to see that their results are going to be a little bit more disappointing, partly because 2021 was continuing to be such a high coming out of the pandemic. So I think it's a lot of that. It's a lot of Domino's really was flying high for about a year and a half there and is just continuing to come back down to earth. And just generally speaking, you know, competition in delivery and in pizza is stiff. So they were never going to be able to maintain such a dominance in this industry, particularly as people start second guessing how much they're eating out.
Yeah, I think it'll be actually more interesting to look at this in a couple weeks once Papa John's and Pizza Hut have reported and we can, you know, pinpoint, is this a segment situation? I don't even want to call it a problem. Because like a 3% same store sales drop is disappointing, but not devastating, especially for a company like Domino's. But, you know, is this something this segment is going through? Or if those other brands report, you know, strong sales for the quarter, then we start to look at, is this a Domino's problem? But it's always tricky at the beginning of earnings season to pinpoint what we're looking at industry-wide.
Right. And like last quarter we already kind of saw a little bit of these trends happening. We saw Domino's sort of moving down. We saw Pizza Hut already in negative same store sales, but we saw Papa John's actually doing pretty well.
Right.
So I wonder if that's going to kind of be the trend that we see Domino's and Pizza Hut moving down while Papa John's continues to move up. Like that's going to be that's my prediction. I think we're going to actually see Papa John's increase its same store sales lead in the pizza category. That's my personal opinion.
One thing I know Domino's, I believe they reported this at their last earnings, the last quarterly report, was how much of this is also tied up in labor. And that would be the one thing I'd push back about what you're saying, Holly, is that the labor issues were directly impacting Domino's ability to hire delivery drivers. And Domino's being such a heavy delivery brand, that obviously has an effect. I mean, they were talking about closing during certain hours to account for their shortage of employees and drivers in particular. So if other pizza brands are having that same issue, then perhaps not. Perhaps everybody's going to be struggling. You know, anecdotally, what we've heard from a lot of restaurants is that the labor stuff has kind of bottomed out, that they were starting to see trend back in the right direction. We're definitely going to see that start to trend back in the right direction. If and when we hit a recession, lots of people talking about we are already in a recession. I'm not a smart enough economist to know when we cross the line from inflation to recession. And I also ask, can we not be in one or the other? Can we just be somewhere like right in the middle? But anyway, that's for smarter minds than I. But yeah, I mean, we're going to see a shift back, and it'll be interesting because if we start to see results from the pizza companies start to come back, then we will all know, okay, so there was some legitimate labor was as a significant burden on a chain like Domino's that relies so heavily on something like a delivery driver.
Definitely.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, that's what I really focused on in an upcoming piece I'm writing on, is the reliance of Domino's on delivery drivers is a really big factor. And they talked about it a lot in their last earnings call. This was their new CEO's first earnings call. So fun one to be the first CEO for. So should have been a really fun time for him. Should have been a fun earnings call for him. Sam C should have been fun. It was not, I'm sure.
Should have been fun is not the same as fun. You know that.
In fact,
right?
It's the opposite of fun.
All right, Sam. Well, do you have anything happy to say before we sign off?
Oh, do I? Well, I will just once again plug our Emerging Restaurateur Live Learning Series. I had a lot of fun on that. We did that on Tuesday afternoon, had incredible conversation among our many hundreds of attendees, and we're doing those every month. Educational, in the weeds, deep dives on emerging restaurateur challenges, strategies, and such. So check that out, nrn.com/live learning. And we are T-minus 2 months exactly until Create in Denver. And that is our in-person event that is just a ton of fun. I mean, it's a great opportunity to get in front of people who are in your shoes. Whether you're an emerging restaurateur, whether you're a big chain executive, we have people of all walks who come to that. So go check that out, create.nrn.com. We might have some special goodies to offer as far as registration for Create, so stand by for that. But go check it out, because we'd love to have you come join us in Denver. Those are good things. Those are happy things. I'm happy on that stuff.
Those are great things.
Those are great things.
Sam's smiling. Well,
you know what else is great is Brett's interview with David Bierzon, CEO of Snooze Eatery. That was a great transition, Leanne. Don't even, I could see you in the video. I could see you
working. Yeah.
It's a great transition.
Good stuff.
If you say so.
So I'm going to throw it to that, but thank you both of you for joining me today. It's been lovely.
Thanks, Holly.
Hey, Holly popping in here to say, have you registered for Create yet? It's our live event where you can rub elbows with other restaurant professionals and learn from some of your peers, no matter if you have 10 units or 10,000. For loyal listeners of this podcast who are restaurant operators, we are excited to announce that you can register for free. That's right, free. That's a $550 value at no charge for you. Just go to create.nrn.com and use the promo code EXTRASERVING, one word, at checkout.
Hey, David, it's Brett Thorne from Nation's Restaurant News. How are you?
Hey, Brett, how are you?
I'm doing all right. And wanted to talk to you about how Snooze did over, well, in 2021 for part of our sort of deeper dives into our top 200 report, because it looks like you guys did pretty well. You opened some restaurants, your sales were up. So I was hoping you could tell me what you guys did last year.
Yeah, we had a, you know, we had a, fortunately, we had a really good recovery from COVID. You know, it was by market. As markets opened up, obviously California, you know, was the last to open really in June, July of 21. Mm-hmm. But as we were able to bring the restaurants back online, you know, the comp sales over 2019, you know, were through the roof. You know, in some markets, you know, as a business, I think because of California and some of the staggering of reopening, you know, we probably, you know, ran up in the high single digits in totality, but many markets were, you know, were up in the 20% plus range.
Over 2019.
And I think over 2019,
that's,
you know,
great.
we didn't really look at 2020 as a
right.
comp year.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't count.
Because everything was closed,
right.
And you know, a lot of it was just pent up guest demand, and people wanted to get out, and people wanted to treat themselves. And you know, what's interesting about the breakfast segment is we had a lot of people telling us, kind of being naysayers, saying you guys are going to really suffer with people working from home, based on the assumption that, you know, people use breakfast on the way to their office. But the opposite is really true. Our Monday through Friday has gone up significantly. And we believe because people can work from home, they have more flexibility in their schedules. You know, they're more likely to hold business meetings with a colleague out for breakfast. They're, you know, able to take the time and meet a friend for breakfast. So that was a really a great surprise.
Or even bring their laptop and work for breakfast, or work during breakfast,
yep.
while having maybe a mimosa or a Bloody Mary or your other cocktails.
Well, it's true. Alcohol sales are up significantly since we kind of, you know, jump-started the business again in 2021. And again, I think people just want to treat themselves, and you know, we were somewhat of a special occasion restaurant prior to COVID, meaning we had, you know, we had the best sales in our category. That being said, somewhat lower guest frequency, and I believe that's really actually helped us through recovery and on this side of COVID.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? How does being a special occasion restaurant help in recovery?
You know, again, people more likely to, there seems to be a demand of people wanting to treat themselves, people going more frequently to the places that they kind of deem special,
mm-hmm.
And especially places that are gathering places. As we've kind of gotten into 2022 and we're in this space of hyper, you know, commodity inflation, and rising labor costs, you know, we've been able to manage price and take price in a way we believe a lot of restaurants can't, just because of the quality of the experience and the uniqueness of it.
And also because your average prices are, I mean, you're not a steakhouse, you're a reasonably priced indulgence.
Right, right. You know, we're certainly not... you know, we're certainly not a steakhouse. We're certainly not necessarily even a fine lunch, but or a fine dining establishment for lunch. But you know, we have an average check of you know, of around $17 a person at this point.
But that's cheap for lunch, and it's pricey for breakfast, but cheap for lunch. So, you know, it's still an affordable way to go out and have fun and make some eggs.
Yeah, we benchmark ourselves off of, you know, all of our competitors, and it's kind of, at least for, you know, it might not be Village Inn or IHOP, but certainly we're right where we need to be price-wise for breakfast. It seems to be the norm.
And Village Inn and IHOP don't serve alcohol, which I believe is a significant portion of your sales, right? You do a good cocktail business.
It is, you know, pre-COVID alcohol, you know, alcohol was, you know, in the 10 to 12% range. And, you know, now it's in the 13 to 16% range. It just continues to climb and be an important part of our business.
Yeah, I was in Denver last fall, I guess, and I went to a snooze, and I can't imagine I didn't have a Bloody Mary when I was there. I had a nice time.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that.
And
you know, the alcohol sales combined with non-alcoholic beverages, you know, that's really the sweet spot for us, because between the two, you know, that puts us at 25% beverage mix, which is as solid casual dining as you could be in our industry.
And obviously, that's quite profitable.
Yeah.
And it's not like you guys, I don't think, were ever like a rush on the way to work kind of breakfast place anyway. So that probably wasn't a market that you lost, since you probably didn't have it. Or did you? Did people run in and grab eggs and go to work at snooze?
No, I think, again, more special occasion, more, hey, this is going to be an event where I'm meeting a friend, I'm meeting a colleague, I'm spending an hour. Certainly not a grab and go, or you know, our average guest stays at approximately an hour versus 30 minutes.
Did you do a lot of takeout and delivery when everyone was doing takeout and delivery?
Yeah, we did a lot of everything. I mean, I think that you know, the beauty of COVID for us, and I think a lot of breakfast places, is we were, you know, pre-COVID, we were a very, very successful one-trick pony. We were fantastic at having lines out the door and having guests wait 45 minutes to get a table and eat a dine-in breakfast with us. And fortunately, we had actually been in test in one restaurant with Olo just as COVID hit. So we were actually able to go live like within 10 days of COVID hitting.
Wow.
And we've developed this incredible takeout business that's approximately, you know, 16% and continuing to grow of our business.
Wow.
It's been incredibly sticky, meaning as people have gotten back out to restaurants, that number has stayed the same. And we've also been really motivated to develop other sales channels. We started an online-only breakfast sandwich concept called Bodega, with an EGG in the middle instead of just one G.
Ah, cute.
And we tested that in our Charlotte market in two restaurants, and we're getting ready to roll that out to 10 restaurants in Houston on July, beginning of July.
And that's breakfast sandwiches, you said.
Yep, and that's more of an opportunity for people to order ahead on their phone or use DoorDash or Uber Eats and have breakfast sandwiches either delivered to them or pick up breakfast sandwiches on their way to work. You know, we are investing heavily right now in catering, because we do believe that, you know, office is coming back. And although catering might be in a little different form, but it's a very real and large business opportunity.
You know, that's a good point. Our office has started to bring in breakfast more often, because most of us don't go into the office very often, and they want to motivate us to. So,
right, it's true.
I'm sure there's a lot of that going on.
We're seeing that. We're seeing companies in, you know, will will give people Snooze gift cards so they can order breakfast at home, have it delivered, and then they'll have a virtual meeting with a Snooze breakfast.
Oh.
So as the workplace gets more creative, you know, our business has to kind of step up our ability to meet that.
So will you have, it sounds like your dining rooms are full, and then you're finding other ways to satisfy your customers who don't want to eat in the dining room.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that was the market. You know, I always used to really struggle with figuring out if takeaway would be a good sales channel for our business, because I always used to say it's hard enough to get eggs to from the kitchen to a table without getting cold.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, you know, our food travels very well. We've invested heavily in new packaging, for instance, for like to-go Eggs Benedict. We created these little cardboard inserts that kind of coddle the Benedict so they don't break in transport. And the reviews on the to-go food are excellent.
Wow. Yeah, wow. I would have thought a breakfast burrito or a sandwich to-go would work, but the idea of takeout Eggs Benedict didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, and it's actually doing really well.
That's great.
We had actually started with a limited menu and takeaway, because that was kind of our thesis as well, as some of these other dishes won't sell. But as we opened up the entire menu to takeaway, the takeaway sales continue to grow. So clearly the demand is there.
Wow. So you introduced Bodega with two G's in Charlotte, and now you're in about to launch in 10 locations in Texas, right?
Yep, in Houston. So that's going to kind of be a full market test. And, you know, the Charlotte test was really kind of a proof of ops test. You know, can we actually physically do this at a couple restaurants? And then going into a full market test where we can actually, you know, we have some density of restaurants. We can put full marketing behind it. And really see what kind of legs it has. And we think that, you know, based on what we've seen in Charlotte, that there's a big opportunity there for us.
Awesome. What other expansion plans do you guys have, if any? I mean, testing Bodega,
yeah,
how do we roll that out? But are there other markets you're looking to go to?
You know, continuing to grow. I think that was probably the biggest fear and negative impact, you know, whether you're a public or private restaurant company. As COVID hit, everyone immediately stopped their growth plans. I mean, they stopped projects mid-construction and kind of waited to see which way the market was going to go. But in 2021, we were able to get 6 restaurants open, which was a great recovery from coming out of COVID.
Yeah.
You know, this year we'll get 10 restaurants open.
Great.
And next year we'll be back on that pace of 12 to 13 restaurants a year, which for full service casual dining it's a big number.
Yeah. And are you going into new markets?
We just opened up in Nashville, so in Tennessee. Charlotte, we only have 2 restaurants, so that's as of this morning, we have 3 restaurants, so we just opened this morning.
Congratulations.
Today's Wednesday, so that's number 3. So we're continuing to build out North Carolina. During COVID, we opened our first restaurant in Atlanta, and so that's a big area of growth for us. So right now, infilling into existing markets. This year into Tennessee, and then next year into Florida, which we expect to be a giant market for us. It's a big state, lots of trade areas, lots of opportunity, and we're infilling existing markets. You know, we're getting ready to open, you know, numbers 11 and 12 here in the Colorado market. In Texas, we have 18 restaurants now, and by the end of the year, probably 23. I mean, we're really focused on infill and just getting some good growth.
Sounds great. Well, you've answered all my questions. Congratulations on not on answering my questions, but on a successful recovery, and I wish you continued good luck.
Thank you. If I could add one thing that I didn't get to share, you know, if our business, I know we're focused on growth and bodega and all these sales channels, but, you know, if someone were to have just asked me, what is the biggest focus in your business to get back to, you know, raging success, it's just, we are 100% focused on talent and retention. I mean, that, you know, I have said to people when they ask about how did COVID impact your business? So, you know, I say that the great tragedy of COVID was this decline in tenure amongst our management and our hourly staff. And, you know, everyone's read about the Great Resignation, and I think it's impacted the restaurant business more than many other industries.
Yep.
And the competition for talent has never been as difficult. So really everything we do and talk about on a daily basis is about attracting great people, keeping great people.
And have you...
We can't grow without them.
Right, exactly. So have you launched any specific initiatives for that, or raised salaries or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, the salary piece is, we always try to benchmark ourselves to, you know, in a place where we're very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think salary is just a component. Our work-life balance, because of our hours, we close at 2:30 so people can be home with their families, has kind of always been a great, a great selling point to get people to come to work with us. We've invested heavily in training, and we've just created an entire leadership development department, because at the end of the day, people, you know, leave any business because they don't feel like they have forward momentum. So creating opportunity for people, making sure that they're prepared to take advantage of those opportunities is really the biggest focal point of our investment right now in infrastructure.
That makes perfect sense. Great. Well, thank you for adding that. I appreciate it. And
thanks for reaching out. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.